So, Bill, you're telling me that it's only $350 to get into the White House Correspondents' Dinner?
That's what I understood. Now, does that mean that everybody that wants to get a ticket can get one? I don't know. But somebody posted that overnight, and I thought, that's interesting.
Maybe we'll have to go next year. Or, hey, he's going to do it again in 30 days. So maybe
he's going to do it in 30 days. Maybe we'll get to do it in the new ballroom.
Ooh, there you go. Sounds like a plan. Welcome to the Georgia Show. Thanks for joining us today, which is brought to you by the Georgia Record, georgiarecord.com. Please follow all our social media on X, our Rumble channel, CDM1, and on YouTube. Please subscribe to us there. And please check out our no-ad subscriptions. It's a way for you to support us without and support free media and to get all of our content across CDM with no advertisements. People love it. So thank you for checking that out and supporting us, all of you who do. It's been very popular. Bill, I've got a few things to talk about, but what do you want to go through today?
So I think we overlap on a couple subjects. You're doing the majority of the heavy lifting today. So my understanding is we're going to talk a bit about the assassination attempt. We might point out a couple of the oddities that are already showing up and some of the things that are showing up online. We'll talk a little bit about one of the key races here in Georgia. And as we've said, watch the details. And if you do, you will learn. And we may be learning some things about a couple of the candidates, and we'll talk about that.
Interesting. So, let's get to the correspondence dinner. How do you want to do this? I have the clip, if you want to show that.
Go right ahead with what you have, and then I may supplement it depending on what you've pulled.
Okay, this is on CDM.press. It is our main channel for the network. But let me just find all those videos. Hold on. Here we go. So there's that, and then there's more of him being evacuated. See the Secret Service coming out there with their long guns. Anyway, and there's a bunch of videos on X of pandemonium in the room, in the hallways, the police, and then pushing away bystanders who were trying to get in to see what was going on. But what did you want to highlight, Bill?
There was a couple very interesting things. Let's take a look at a different angle of the event as it unfolded. So we're going to be behind the front table as if we were one of the people seated at the front table, and you'll be able to watch the initial folks walk up to Trump, and then all of a sudden things escalate, and you can see Secret Service with the long guns and others run by you to take up tactical positions. So what surprised a number of folks, and many people commented on it, they seemed to let him sit at the table longer than you would have expected.
Yeah, it took a good 10 or 15 seconds. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
And you could see other people moving from the other end of the table before they moved Trump. It's unclear why they would do that. They probably, they could very well have very specific protocols for this kind of a setup. It may have been because the threat was in another room. Unclear. One of the fascinating things, most people know Dana White, who is a close friend of Trump. He heads the UFC. He's CEO of the UFC fighting organization. And we get a picture of him, a video of him, while this was unfolding. Take a look at this.
I literally took every minute of it in, and it was pretty crazy, unique experience.
So you gotta give the guy credit. Not much scares this dude. So what you couldn't see, but that was unfolding around him, was there were a lot of people on the ground. Many climbed underneath tables. Some ran for the corners and sides of the room to get out of there. But Dennett just kind of hung tight, kept his head down a little bit, but that was about it. And pretty interesting. The other thing that's now unfolded, we could show some pictures of the gentleman out front if you have some of those, or I can do it.
No, go ahead.
So one of the things that people are noting is here's a picture of the assailant, alleged assailant on the ground. Apparently they've stripped him. It's unclear why. It may have been that he was injured in some way. But one of the questions that people asked was, you know, this is a crime scene and it's important crime. How is it that a cameraman got in there to get this picture? And that's unclear at the moment. Here he is on his from another angle. Apparently they had to strip him and put one of those space blankets over him. Again, unclear why. And then as things have begun to unfold, people are asking questions about who this gentleman is. And on this previous video, we showed pictures of him here. I won't play that again. Then this surfaces, and it is a video, I believe it's from ABC, with the same gentleman talking about apparently an invention, an emergency brake for wheelchairs that he is involved with. Let's take a look at this.
Allen developed a prototype for a wheelchair emergency brake.
The wheelchair brakes tend to lock the wheels, but don't actually lock the chair to the ground. The idea with this is to prevent it from moving at all.
So, like so many things over the past months, here we have this strange conflagration of events and facts. How is it that this particular person was on television promoting a wheelchair device and then happens to be the gentleman that attempts to invade the correspondence dinner, ostensibly to harm Trump or someone else, or maybe many people? Very, very odd. Okay, let me take that down. The other thing I noted was, did you have occasion to think about the venue for the event last night and what it has in history? Let's see.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I'm glad you are.
Go right ahead.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
So this was held at the Washington Hilton, and the Washington Hilton is also the site of the attempted Reagan assassination. Let's see, March 30th, 1981. So just an interesting, I mean, there's only so many places they could hold this, I guess, in Washington, but it did strike my political consultant as interesting that it happened to be at the same venue. Becky. Sure.
Well, no, that's just, you see all these weird connections, and it's almost like it was planned in some kind of humorous kind of way or something. I don't know. It's bizarre.
Yeah. You know? The president jumped right on it later in the evening, made a statement. And in that, he actually, in subsequent posts, he is focused on the need for the ballroom that's being built adjacent to the White House, and the fact that it's tied up in a legal morass at the moment, and that legal problem needs to end. He claims that or stated that it was a lady walking her dog that caused the case. I haven't tracked it that closely, but that doesn't seem to be just cause to stop the building of a presidential ballroom.
Jeez. Yeah, they're doing and throwing anything they can at that one, that's for sure. Trump made a point also that this morning that there's a security issue to the ballroom. It's not just aesthetics. It's you can have events like this with complete security, which it should be.
I think he referred to it as the military top secret ballroom. Mm-hmm. It almost sounds ominous when he says it that way. I'm not sure quite what that means.
Wow. Well, is that all you got on that, Bill, or do you got anything
else? That's all I got. I bet there's more coming, though, and it'll probably just get crazier. We'll see. We're glad that we're very glad that the president is okay and that everybody else is okay. I did understand, apparently, there was a Secret Service person that may have gotten hit by a round, but apparently I believe that they're okay as well.
Yeah, the vest stopped it from what I understand. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. Stay with us on the Georgia Show. We'll be right back after this. And by the way, we run a lot of political ads. We're not sponsoring anybody. We're running here. It's just they want to get their message out, and as long as it's not violent or ugly or anything like that, we're going to run the ads. So here we go.
I am Eugene Yee, and I'm running for Congress in Georgia's 1st Congressional District to help make America affordable again. President Trump showed what's possible through the executive action to help working Americans. In Congress, I will work to turn those policies into law. That means no tax on tips, no tax on overtime pay, and protecting Social Security benefits from being taxed. Families deserve to keep more of what they earn, and I'm ready to stand up for working families.
My name is Eugene Yee, and I approve this message.
Do you already have your investments with Fidelity? I'm David Cross with U.S. Asset Management. Did you know that you can assign your investment management to my team and put my 35 years of experience to work for you? You simply assign us as your investment manager and you keep the same username and password. Professional management, and you get to work with someone who shares your values. Call U.S. Asset Management today and put us to work for you.
A warm welcome here at the National Press Club. Welcome to the journalists, welcome to the Embraer team, and welcome to the other guests that we have here. I'm going to announce, and as some of you guessed it right when they came in, the first E2 order by an American operator. And that operator is a fellow. We believe this is really a strategic shift to unlock profitability for the customer. I'm very pleased that we have Andrew Levy here as the CEO of Avelo, and I'm very pleased to give the stage to share a little bit more about what Avelo is going to do with the E2-195. Thank you very much.
Couldn't be more excited to be here as part of this historic announcement. We have such a great cultural fit as companies, so we're very, very excited to be Embraer's newest customer. We launched our airline in April of 21, and our target is focusing on small secondary airports of large metro areas. We've carried over 8 million customers since we started on 63,000 flights, and we've done all these things with 1,200 of the greatest crew members I could ever imagine having, and many of them are here with me today. This is the right airplane for us. It's going to open up opportunities for us that no other aircraft can serve. The best thing about the airplane, of course, is you will not find a middle seat on this airplane. It doesn't exist. We won't have any to offer. It's going to be the best cabin in the United States, and we're so excited about that. This is going to elevate our experience to the highest level, and we think our customers are absolutely going to love the airplane.
So, Bill, I sat down with Brindy Wells, good friend of the show. We stream our service on John B. Wells on his Rumble channel. They stream on our Getter. And so we have a very tight relationship with Caravan to Midnight. She is South African. She's been on the show many times. And she is working a problem. Let me just bring this video file up here. A problem because a lot of the South Africans, or many of them, immigrated into the U.S. prior to the executive order that have claimed asylum, are having difficulty getting those claims adjudicated in a good way. And this is an issue that we care about. We care about our Christian brothers coming into the country. And we just wanted to play this chat we had with Brindy and her friend Sunel, and you can get a handle on the problem yourself. So here we go.
Well, we're not in the studio, obviously. We're in beautiful Savannah, Georgia, doing some reporting here. And I'm very honored to have two women who are very impressive, and Brindy Wells, the audience knows, but Sunel is a South African who I'm going to let Brindy introduce. Thank you for coming on, ladies.
Thank you so much, Todd. Let me introduce Sunel. Sunel is a South African-born native who came into America applying for asylum in May 2022, and that is the reason why we are talking to you. In the advent when President Trump signed the executive order 14204 to grant South Africans, the minority South African group who's currently being targeted to flee to America for asylum. But the problem is that that executive order is not retroactive. So I am going to hand over to Sunal, let her explain the situation. But the plea today is that President Trump will hear us, because a lot of South Africans has fled the country over the last 30 years. And yes, we are very grateful to President Trump that he's recognized the problem, but the problem has been there for a long time now. And there are people currently in America that has applied for asylum years ago that are being targeted for removal. So over to you, Sunal.
Thank you so much, Brandy. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me and inviting me on, Todd. So, we came here legally with work visas and everything. And when our situation changed, we realized it was truly unsafe for us to return, and we applied for asylum. Fast track forward to February of 2025, President Trump signed Executive Order 14204, I think that was the one. And we were incredibly excited because that was our breakthrough. Because applying for asylum in 2022, we still hadn't received any interview date, any callbacks about our applications or anything. And we thought that his executive order would actually include the South Africans who applied for asylum. Unfortunately, that was not the case. And just over a year later, we are still waiting. Hundreds, possibly thousands of South Africans who followed the legal pathway of applying for asylum are still left in limbo in the system.
So, Sunal, you haven't had any response from the system at this point from your asylum application, is that correct?
None, that's correct, yes.
Well, anybody else in the group, or just none?
We have had some of them who've gone for interviews. At the beginning of, or at the end of 2025, we had one family that were approved. Yesterday, I heard of someone else that was approved in January of this year. But those who applied before the executive order have not been invited for interviews, or if they have, they haven't received any adjudication of it yet either. Those who applied after the executive order was signed have been approved, but ever since then, or before that, no one heard anything back yet.
So now I remember, Can I just quickly pivot the question? So now when we were having a discussion in the group about 2 weeks ago, quite a few of the people in the group actually indicated to me that there are removal proceedings in place already. Can you just tell us more about that?
Some of them are facing removal proceedings. I am unsure of the details of their situations. So what happens is if you land with a USCIS officer who does not think that your fear is credible, they refer you to the court. And then the court ultimately decides whether you stay or go. But some of them have been put into removal proceedings.
So, Brindy, I saw this morning that he's upping the number per year from 7,500 to 10,000 South Africans a year to come in. But you have tried to get in touch with certain areas of the administration with no success. Am I correct?
Totally correct. I have tried pretty much every avenue. You know, you remember how desperate I sounded when I contacted you eventually. Mm-hmm. I have spoken to quite a few lawyers, immigration lawyers, high-level immigration lawyers, who they are all gung-ho for a while, and then it just get the like little note that says, oh, it's actually not my area of expertise. I'm also aware of a South African that didn't go through the process of the immigration or the intake in South Africa. He just flew here on a visitor's visa, or I don't know actually what visa he came in on. And when he landed, applied for asylum, and they actually arrested him. And as far as I know, he's still in jail. That was reported by Colonel Chris Wyatt. Yeah. So it's a very interesting situation, because we now know that President Trump recognizes the threat and that it is real, contrary to mainstream media, who's trying to pretend that this is not happening. And you know, you and I have spoken over the last how many years, where we have documented the murders, the targeting, the absolute chaos that our people are experiencing. And if you look at the South Africans coming in, because I know immigration is a big deal, but none of them are dependent on welfare. I mean, obviously, they're just asking for a hand up, not a handout. But pretty much everybody that has managed to make it through the process has become self-sufficient. And our cultures are so aligned. We are just so grateful to be in America that we just want to be a part of it. And the problem is that President Trump recognizes the threat. He has upped the numbers to that extent. But there are people in America that has built lives. I know personally of two or three of them that actually started a farm. They are already supplying food to their communities, and they are facing removal procedures. I have those documents with me that I can forward on to you. And that is my concern, is that President Trump knows this is a problem. He has recognized the threat, and we are not asking for anything. We're just asking that the executive order can go retroactive and include the people that applied for asylum prior to the actual signing of the executive order.
My sense is, I mean, we're seeing this in a lot of areas in the government where there are people inside the government who have a different agenda than the president. And my sense is this is what you're dealing with, is a bureaucracy that doesn't want this to happen, even though the president says he does. So what are your next steps, Sunil? Any legal strategy that you have?
Currently, I personally don't have a legal strategy. I've really just been out there on social media trying to get the attention of the right people in the high up positions, like President Trump, like the Vice President, like Marco Rubio, the press secretary. I've really been working at getting their attention, and some of it has helped, but we have heard no response yet at all.
Tell us about your farm. You have a farm, correct?
We don't have a farm.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We came here. Yeah, no, that's totally fine. That's how we started, though.
Okay.
We came here working on a farm. We're so grateful for the farmer who helped us come over here. And then once the work ended, the goal was to work for him up until we become citizens, and the work just ran out, and we needed to make another plan. And unfortunately, South Africa is just way too dangerous to go back to. So we applied for asylum, but my husband actually works as a cook at our local hospital. And I have been a para educator to a student who has learning challenges, who is hard and deaf and hard of hearing. And he is actually graduating now after he's made a ton of progress. But I will be starting out as a CNA next month at our local nursing home. So we work hard at building our community and being part of our community. I'm also the vice president of our business chamber of commerce in our town, which is a great privilege and an honor to have been elected as such. So we bring positivity to our communities.
Brindy, what are you hearing on the ground in South Africa against the white population? Are you hearing any more bad things going on?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, just this morning, I was in touch with people in Nelstrom, which is a town in South Africa, who has just suffered a vicious home invasion. They beat the wife to a pulp. She's in hospital. The husband has a knife wound. But the point is that this has been going on for years. I mean, I documented farm murders. I showed pictures. And even that, you know, that video that President Trump played in the White House to Julius Malema, in the face of that evidence, they deny it. But what has happened as a result of President Trump stepping in and the tremendous propaganda and hatred towards President Trump in the mainstream and in South Africa, there is a huge counter communist narrative that mm-hmm. is every time you post evidence of, I mean, there was a farm murder again, I think a week ago, Sunil, if I remember. And I mean, it's just horrific. The pictures went up on X. And then these people come on, I don't know if they bots or what they are, but they just come in and villainize and say that it's not happening and that we are just making this up. And so there's not just that, but as a result, it's activated quite a large amount of people in South Africa that is communist mindset. And so the farm attacks and the violence is increasing exponentially, and specifically the ones who are going for these interviews at the American embassies, they target them there, and it's the actual government targeting them. About two months ago, the officials working for the American embassy that were processing the applications literally had to flee because the border control of South Africa entered the premises and started heckling the people that were waiting in queue to be interviewed and just calling them cowards and idiots, and they must just run away. And after all these years where they've been telling us, go back to Europe, you don't belong in Africa, now that we're trying to get out, they don't want us to leave. Because the South African white minority, yes, we're a minority, but we pay the most, we pay 80% of the taxes. Sure. So they don't want to let go of the cash cow, but they want to kill us. So it's the weirdest dichotomy I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. It's very similar in other Christian countries. Yeah. Go ahead, Suna.
Yeah. Yeah. And not, sorry, Todd, not just that. I mean, the threats we receive on X and social media platforms are insane. These people think they can just go on there and literally threaten us on these social platforms. And yeah, they feel safe behind their keyboards, but it's still, we're not even in South Africa anymore and they threaten us. In South Africa, I was told to my face by, I was surrounded by a group of Black South Africans, and they told me to my face, you Boers, go back to heaven, or go back to Europe. They want to get us to heaven. Go back to Europe or we will kill you. My son, when he was in kindergarten, he was 5 years old, a Black child threatened him by telling him he's going to drill a piece of wood into his head. Where does a 5-year-old get that unless it's taught to them at home?
Sure, yes.
Also in schools, my daughter is still there, and this is one of the biggest threats, and this is what keeps me up at night, is the threats that I get, I don't mind. I've been targeted since forever, but since I started speaking out, and so I am bulletproof by now. You can pretty much say whatever you want to me by now, but they just told me, and I will send you the screenshots, that they know where my children are. They are in the process of applying also for this asylum, so we're just praying they get out in time. But my grandson, he is in standard 4, which is what, grade 6? And he plays rugby, and he's the only white kid in the rugby team, but he loves to play. And they actually tackled him on the rugby ground this last Saturday. His knee is absolutely shot. He's wearing a brace, and they beat him up. And they say to him, he must get off the rugby field. He doesn't belong there. Now, this kid is, 12, and he's absolutely devastated. He doesn't understand what the hell, you know, what did he ever do to deserve that? But that's the kind of targeting they do. They single you out just because of the color of your skin. If that's not racism, I don't know what is, you know?
Yeah.
So what else do people need to know, Brendy and Sunil? Anything?
Well, just we need a lawyer. An immigration lawyer. I have reached out to quite a few high level ones that, like I said, they are all in, they are ready to go, and then something happens. I don't know if they're targeting them or if they're threatening them or what is happening, But our plea is, please, we are desperately seeking somebody that can just help us through this loophole, because that's what it is. It's a loophole. The threat is real. The president has acknowledged the threat is real. He signed an executive order. It's real. But there's this, just these limbo people, and there's a loophole, and we just want that loophole closed. We're not asking for handouts. We're just asking, give us a chance and let us help you fight. We've already been through a communist takeover. We know what you are facing in America right now. Let us be your allies, because we've survived. We've survived 30 years in a hellhole being targeted. Mm. And yeah. It's only through the power of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ that we have made it thus far. So we're just asking for this loophole to be closed. And anybody out there that has the ear, that has some advice, please reach out to us. We just want to get this done. Thank you.
That's probably why they don't want you here, Brindy, because you're effective.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Sue, now.
I want to reiterate that we do not need what they are giving the refugees. We are rooted in our communities. We have jobs, we have insurance, we have everything that we need. We have homes, we have everything. All we need is, we are petitioning to the president to please include us in his executive order by saying that those who came here legally from South Africa, who check all the requirements, are included and are granted asylum.
One more thing, is there's quite a few of these South African asylum seekers that has had their work permits revoked. So they are here, they are so scared to be sent back because they have nowhere to go, and they will be murdered if they go back, because there's a target on every single South African that has gone to America, because now you're evil, you mugger, and you're a Trump fanatic. You know the drill. But these people have had their work permits revoked, and that is the worst thing that can happen, because how can you survive if you cannot provide for your family? And that's all we ask. We just want an opportunity to work. Let us work. We don't need handouts. Let us just work. That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. If there's any updates, please let us know.
We will. Thank you so much, Todd.
Okay.
Thank you, Todd. Thank you for having me.
Bye. Okay.
Comments on that, Bill?
Well, you know, we have reported in the past year on the dastardly doings in South Africa, the reverse genocide that's been and is ongoing against white people, against Christians there in that country. So it's more than just a plea. This needs to happen in order to save these people's lives. And as you heard, they're self-sufficient. This is not letting people in that are then going to become a burden. That's not the case here. These people are self-sufficient. Many have been here for quite some time and simply need to be included in the presidential order that simply has a gap in it. Simple as that.
I think what's going on is the bureaucracy is not on the same page as the president. So I think they're obviously.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Perhaps. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more on the Georgia Show. Don't go anywhere.
Pay to play, shady land deals, and a rigged gambling law. Career politician Burt Jones made a fortune in public office, but it gets worse. Jones blocked the legislation to stop the sale of illegal Chinese vape pens in Georgia. Now, instead of following Trump's order to stop, the Jones family is selling the same deadly addictive Chinese vapes that Trump banned in their gas stations. Career politician Burt Jones. Corruption. It's what he lives and breathes.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to.
Psst. Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Okay, Bill, I've got another interview I want to play, but do you have any comments on anything?
No, we're good. Go ahead and do your interview, and then we'll cover off something more local to one of the races here in Georgia.
Okay. I sat down with Marsha Bowen from Promethean Action. I was just in Savannah this week doing lots of meetings. We're going to have more writers and more content on the Georgia Record from that area of the state. But Marsha's a very good resource, and I think you'll enjoy this discussion.
Welcome back to the Skiff. I'm here with Marsha Bowen, and I am on the road in Savannah, Georgia, down on the port. So you may get a little noise here, but Marsha, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be on.
I wanted to talk to you again because I had such a good conversation with you at CPAC, and I wanted to get your take on what you see happening geopolitically, because a lot has happened since CPAC, and the ceasefire is on, then it's off, and it's, you know, back. Where do we stand on all this, in your opinion?
I think what President Trump is doing is he is arranging the ability to bring a force of government into Iran that can work with the United States. And in one of his Truth Socials, he said, look, the government is fractured. It's very hard for them to communicate. So when he laid out his ceasefire, I think he decided that there was enough goodwill expressed that it was worth keeping up the negotiations. And I would say a good example of that, you might recall, is in one of his Truth Socials, Trump requested that the eight Iranian women that were to be executed, I believe on Tuesday night, he said it would be very good if they would not be executed. Please, I would really appreciate your attention to this matter. And then it was announced that these eight women would not be executed. Four of them were allowed to go free, and four others are going to stay in jail for 1 month and then be freed. And I think that indicates that there is a moderate faction that is able to deliver, because that's going to be obviously what Trump is looking for. Can he negotiate with a party in Iran? And only he and his team know who they are negotiating with. So when you hear people talking, and the propaganda is so enormous, I really recommend people. I work with Promethean Action, and I think one of the best places you can go to get your updates is PrometheanAction.com, because as one of my friends put it, those who know don't talk. Those who talk don't know. So that's what you've got going on. So we don't try to put forward some as if we are in the inner circle of Trump's cabinet. We're not. But we know from 50 years of history that we've worked through and then studied decades and centuries of history, particularly on the British Empire, we have an ability to hypothesize. And I think our hypotheses have proven to be so stunningly correct on the question of the British Empire. And of course, when you're talking about Iran, you are talking about British Petroleum. You're talking about the British asset since 1908, I believe, when oil was first discovered there. I can't hear you, Todd.
Sorry, I had the mute button on because it was so loud here. Many people don't know that history. That, you know, in the early 20th century, it was the British that controlled Iran. They installed the Shah. They removed Mossadegh, who was the democratically elected leader. And so it doesn't go back just to the revolution in 1979. It goes way back further than that. And this is British territory. You've mentioned this many times. Talk to us about this. And do you think this shutting down the Persian Gulf is impacting Europe in a way that is good for the United States?
Well, I think what Trump and his team are doing is, in a sense, they're shutting down the economy of Iran. I mean, Iran is losing $500 million a day in oil proceeds. And I think they could, the Karg Island, as I understand, that their storage is almost full. So when it's mm-hmm. full, what do? They have to shut off their oil operations, their oil rigs, and that then begins to damage the equipment. So there's mm-hmm. a real time here in terms of, we're talking perhaps days, in which mm-hmm. Iran really has to make some big decisions. I think it is working. I think what Trump is doing, you remember, he's not allowing the Iranian ships out or in. And of course, it's Europe, frankly, I think they've slit their own throat on their own energy policy going back decades and decades with this insane green agenda. So this, and the fact that when we've been so generous, if you will, in what we were giving to NATO all these years, decades, and then President Trump comes in and he starts to question, what are we giving this money for? Where is it going? And then, of course, demanding that they have to start stepping up to the plate in terms of their percentages. And then when we needed them, when Trump launched the military operation on February 28th, where were they? And Britain said, no, we aren't going to participate. Well, that I think sealed the deal. I think it just has made it clear that the British, the European Union, outside of a couple of very good countries like Hungary and Slovakia, you don't have nations. You have a globalized system that is either these nations are going to have to go back to sovereignty or they're going to be irrelevant in history.
You're exactly right. I've said many times that these leaders are working for someone else, not the people of their countries. So when I say harm Europe, I don't mean harming the European people. I mean bring down these governments because they're trying to drag us into a war in Russia. And I think that's part of what Trump's doing, saying you're not here when we needed you, because when they go to war with Russia, we don't want to go in with Article 5 and have to support them in that conflict. So I think that's what's going on right here.
Yes. And of course, you have movements in all of these nations of the European Union of, leaders that are very much in the tradition of Trump, I would say. You know, I would say Trump has really given inspiration to leaders around the world to step up against this globalized system and lead their people. So I think we're going to see some very interesting elections coming up. I think that, the European people are really, just like we became sick and tired of it here in the United States. The difference is we have a constitutional system. We are blessed.
Yes.
No country in the world has a republic as we do. So, but our example is, it's like the light on the hill. It is shining an example for the whole world.
I agree. So I just, a lot of people, I wasn't for this war, but now that we're in it, I want us to come out in a way that's positive for our children's future and for the country. Tell me about your trip to D.C. next week. You have a lot going on.
Yes. Promethean Action has a team, series of teams going into D.C. There's going to be about 8 of us, I would call full-time organizers, and another 8 people coming as supporters who've never done anything like this before. And we'll be going in April 27th through May 1st. And we will be going to all the Republican offices. We have appointments with several dozen offices already. And these were set up by constituents that would call the Washington office, go through the schedules. There's a whole process. You get these meetings set up. So we've had very good response on that. And we'll be going to do those meetings, but as well, we will be going to all the offices of the Republicans and some of the Democrats. In fact, we have a couple of meetings. I won't say right here now, but maybe if we get to talk again, I could tell you there's some very significant Democrats will be meeting there at their offices. And we will also be meeting with some congressmen. We have some meetings with them as well. We have our literature, our new one, our latest pamphlet is entitled Bye-Bye Globalization, America is Back. And it documents what President Trump has succeeded in doing in the last year with the American System 2.0, which is one of the pamphlets when we went last year, we brought with us on what Trump could do with the American System 2.0. Now we're coming back with, here's what he's done. And it was only just begun in terms of the manufacturing renaissance that's underway.
So is your goal to educate, the legislators on this issue?
Yes, and to make clear to them that their constituents back home want them to be a spear point for President Trump. We don't need these rhinos. And, I don't have to tell your audience who they are, but You know what we found? I've been twice last year to Washington, D.C., and it's interesting that many of their aides are young and very inquisitive, very inquisitive, very open, much more than you might find in the congressional, the congressman or woman themselves. And we've had some really excellent discussions with these people. And I think what we hope, here's my view. My view is we've championed the American system for 50 years plus. What I see President Trump doing is we laid the groundwork through decades of organizing campaigns. President Trump has picked up the ball. Much of it, you know, how much of it is instinct and how much does he know of what we've done? I'll leave that for future analysis. But I know that our impact over the decades and now even more so because our Promethean Action YouTube channel has gone from 50,000 subscribers about 6 months ago to well over 500,000 subscribers and plus. So I really recommend people go to our YouTube, go to our website, PrometheanAction.com, and take advantage of the excellent intelligence we've put together.
So people can find, what can they find on the website? And then I'll let you go. But last question.
Well, what you will find on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays are the, I think, the most concise and strategic updates you're going to find from Susan Kokinda and Barbara Boyd. And then on Thursday, is if you could take 2 hours as a live dialogue with Susan and with Barbara and with Adam, our webmaster. And questions come in, you know, live from the audience. Some of our subscribers have sent in questions to be asked, but it gives the audience a chance to actually, you know, kind of go through the ideas and the history of how we've come to the kind of hypotheses that have put us, I think, in the catbird seat and understanding the moment of history we're living in. So, and then we have a lot of other items on our website, including classes we do every Saturday and strategic updates we do every Monday. So we've got a lot going on our website.
Marcia, thank you very much. I have a feeling we'll have you back down the road. So appreciate your time.
Thank you, today. Todd. Good to All talk right, with you. Care. Okay, you take bet. Care.
What do you think about that, Mr. Quinn?
Well, Promethean has set a tone of solid geopolitical analysis in lots of different areas, and they seem to have a very confident posture about their read, their findings. They correctly position things as, you know, you have to treat these as hypotheses because nobody but the Trump administration is inside the circle, so nobody knows all the different things. But you can't mistake that he's made a number of moves, and now they do seem to make sense when put together. You know, Panama confused a lot of people early in the early in his term. They said, "Why is Panama a big deal?" Well, now it's clear why it's a big deal. It is a key pathway for drug trafficking and other types of trafficking going on between the Atlantic and the Caribbean and Pacific. We now have control of that again. And as we should have all along. And now you see, you know, by tightening down the grip on Iran and their capabilities, we seem to be taking out a key hub that I think we may find out has more moving parts, more nefarious moving parts than we have heretofore understood. And so we will see how those all play out. Good folks, recommend folks follow them. They're on X. They have their own website and they have their own pack.
Yeah.
They're doing great work.
Cool. Well, that's all I got. What else do you got to talk about?
Let's talk about Georgia's elections for a couple of minutes. I want to remind people of something we talked about. It's been a month and a half or so. We'll start with this. It's simple. Over the course of these days and the next days as we get through the primaries and into the general election, you're going to see a lot of incumbents asking for your vote, asking for your support. Remember to ask them when they ask you that. Say, why did you vote to hide the slush fund? And when they say, well, it was to protect the victims, to protect the witnesses, keep their names out of the papers. Remind them that the resolution that they said essentially said, send it back, we're not going to accept it, contained provisions to redact all that information, protect the witnesses, protect the victims. And so that excuse doesn't hold water. So ask them why, and when they give you the witness excuse, say, nope, that doesn't hold. What else you got? And watch them squirm, because this is a difficult question for anybody to answer. They will come up almost always with the same answer. So next thing that came up, we have been tracking the quite contentious statements now from numerous candidates, but especially in the governor's race. And we have noted that claims have been made about who's really on Trump's side, why, you know, why they didn't, why they weren't apparently with Trump earlier on. We aired, I believe, in the last show, or maybe the one before that, we aired a video of Rick Jackson answering a question in Banks County, wherein he was asked, pardon me, he was asked, why is it that you gave Trump $1 million at the end of 25? He's already president, but you didn't do anything. You didn't do any contributions for him in 16, 20, or 24 when he was a candidate. And Jackson very quickly says, well, I am late to the Trump train. I admit that. I apologize to him. He's forgiven me, and I hope you can. Well, okay, maybe that makes sense. We have reported previously that Shane Jackson, one of his offspring, I believe, was involved in a DEI conference here in Atlanta to determine how to best deploy DEI implementations across organizations. And now comes something else. Let's take a look at this. This is a from the FEC's contribution tracking website. You can look this up for yourself. But Melody Jackson shows up as a contributor to John Ossoff for Senate. Now, keep in mind, this Senate race is got a lot of criticality around it. This might be one of the keys that might turn the Senate over to the Democrats. It's very, very critical that we take this seat if we can. There are others that are at risk. So one of the questions we asked, this was reported by someone else. So in order to do our due diligence, we checked to see, is this Melody Jackson really Melody Jackson, the wife of Rick Jackson? Well, we looked at several things. One is we asked Grok to identify who Rick Jackson's wife is. It identified Melody Moore Jackson, goes through that she's a research director at Georgia Tech and is a professor, and has been talking about various other technologies, including rewiring the brain through a TED Atlanta presentation. That's kind of interesting. And then down at the bottom, you can see that they talk about the adult children, Shane, Chad, and Dana. We also checked this, Rick Jackson's Wikipedia page. It too lists Melody Jackson as his spouse. And lastly, we looked at the detail page on the contribution itself. Melody Jackson, Professor, Georgia Tech. All of this suggests that indeed, pardon me, that indeed this is Rick Jackson's wife. And she's made contributions. Granted, they're not big ones, but in this case, it's something that's something of besides the point. Why is a gubernatorial candidate's wife contributing to a Democratic senatorial candidate? Concerning, to say the least.
That's this cycle. That's not like 2 years ago or 4 years
ago. Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. That's right now. That's right now.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and she did it through apparently Act Blue. And we've questioned the activities of Act Blue in a number of different regards. So, is this the mask coming off Jackson's campaign? We don't know. We don't know. And it isn't our job to call it out. It is our job to recommend that people do their research for themselves. This came out of research that originated with a number of people because they spotted it, reported it, and then, as I said, we went through to vet it to the best of our ability to make sure it's correct. Recommend that everybody be doing that. This will not be the only race where we're going to get unusual and I'll call it disappointing surprises, but better we know than if we don't know. So With that, Todd, back to you.
Well, I'll be back tomorrow on the Skiff 10 to noon, Monday through Friday, Eastern. We'll have some great guests and talk about everything that's going on in the world, make you the smartest in the room. But until then, Bill, that's all I got. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you next time.